Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the Left of Straight Show with your host, Scott Fullerton, as we discuss everything under the rainbow sun, from LGBT issues to foodies, entertainment to books. Join us as we talk to some of the most interesting leaders and celebrity LGBT guests and allies on the internet. So grab a cocktail, it's always happy hour somewhere, and enjoy the show. Now, here's your host, Scott Fullerton.
Well, howdy, howdy, everybody. Welcome to the Left of Straight Show. It is Monday, September 26th. So excited to have you here with us. Thank you so much. If you follow me on social media at all, you know I am on my road trip. I took my mom on a little trip. She wanted to see the leaves change this fall. It's one of her bucket list things to do that she has not done since she's lived here in Northeast Ohio. So we left this morning from our little Northeast Ohio burg, and we have traveled to Verona, New York, home of the Oneida Indian tribe and one of my mom's favorite casinos, Turning Stone. Of course, it has to be a casino involved somewhere. We all know that by now, right? So this is part one of a 10-day excursion through New England. We're going to go to New York, Massachusetts, Vermont, New Hampshire, Maine, back through Massachusetts, Connecticut, to New York City, through Pennsylvania, and back home to New York City. So going to be an exciting time. I'm going to you live today from Verona. Tomorrow I'll be live. It's either going to be here in Verona or we're going to go directly to Stockbridge, Massachusetts, which is the home of Norman Rockwell and his paintings. And we're going to tour the Norman Rockwell area up there. So we're really looking forward to that. So that'll be a lot of fun. So all sorts of cool stuff. So that's what's happening for me. I'm so excited today. We have two great guests for you. Katie Sullivan, she is an amazing person. She's funny, bright, gorgeous. She is an actress, a producer, a writer. She is a Paralympic sprinter in track and field, and also one of the only bilateral above the knee where the legs were taken off as from birth. So I'm very excited to be talking to her in just a little bit. And then we have Scott Pomfret. He's a great author. He's written quite a few books. He's gotten really prolific again this past year. And his most recent book is going to be, just came out this June. It's about a gay football coach and his star quarterback. So that just came out. So that's going to be exciting stuff. So we have those two coming on today. If you missed any of our shows last week or any of the new season or any in the past year, a little over a year now, please go to our go to the app on either your iPhone or your Android and download the app. It's a free app. Doesn't cost you a thing. Go in your iPhone or Android app store. Type in Left of Straight Radio. That's LEFTOFSTR and the number 8 radio. And the app will come up. It's free. It's easy to download. You'll never miss any of the Left of Straight Radio shows, including this show, Left of Straight Show, every Monday and Tuesday, Standing on Our Soapbox on Wednesdays, Healing Stigma on Left of Straight Radio on Thursdays, and coming in just a couple of weeks, Rust Belts and Rainbows on Saturdays. So thank you so much for tuning into all those, but download that free app, guys. It's a great deal for you. All right, what else? Oh, today I need to give a Spanish. Speaking of my co-hosts and my other shows, Kevin Hogan, as you know, is my co-host for the Healing Stigma and Left of Straight Radio. He's a great, proud member of the bisexual community. I mean, as we know, last week was Bisexual Awareness Week, and he is up in Washington, D.C. This is his third year representing bisexual leaders up in Washington, D.C. at a forum they have at the White House every year. So he is going to be up. He's up there right now as we speak. And actually, the forum is going on as we speak. So big congratulations, big shout out to my co-host, Kevin. We are going to be together on the show Thursday, possibly from a live location in Massachusetts, together for the first time. We will see what happens as that goes. So I'll let you know as that happens and comes forward. But big shout out to Kevin in D.C. today. You guys know I'm a huge political junkie, and I had a great, man, Northeast Ohio, you got to say it's a nail biter for this election, but it's kind of a great place to be if you want to see star power trying to get out the vote for Hillary Clinton. We had Saturday, this is the events for Saturday, okay? Saturday morning, we had four of the cast members from the West Wing. We had Josh Molina, who played Will in the later seasons. We had Mary McCormack, who played Kate, Will's girlfriend, and a foreign policy leader. We had, of course, the amazing Richard Schiff, who played Toby. And we had Bradley Whitford, who played Josh. Came into town, brought us all donuts at the Democratic headquarters, talked to us what their feelings were about the election and why they're for Hillary. Very eloquent, very well-spoken, very gorgeous, all four of the men. And just had some great things to say and were very nice. And they signed a lot of autographs. They talked to everyone about politics, about the show. They were just fantastic. And I was so happy to be there. I did post it on Periscope. I had over 200 live viewers at one time watching it in Periscope. I'm not sure if it automatically saves or not. I know Periscope used to be only 24 hours. If it saved, I'll try to post it later this week because they had some great speeches that I recorded on Periscope. So I'll let you know about that. Also on Saturday, a couple hours later, which I wasn't able to attend to, Chelsea Clinton, Hillary's daughter, came to my town with Sally Field, Academy Award-winning Sally Field. Oh, my God. That's one I really want to go to because you may or may not know her. She's won numerous awards from GLAAD and HRC, and she was, of course, the mom and brothers and sisters that had one of the first out gay sons in major primetime series. And so she was in town. So I missed that, but it was a standing only crowd, amazing stuff there. So excited for that to be happening. And then Saturday night, Anderson Cooper was in town. It was like a gay triple whammy for me on Saturday. It was amazing. But Anderson Cooper came to do part of the lecture series at our local state university, Youngstown State University, part of the lecture series. That I was not able to go to as well, even though it was free tickets for everyone. That was. And I had another event planned, but so it was just, there's amazing stuff happening in Northeast Ohio. So it was a very busy weekend and I had a great time. So we have that going on. I want to thank my media partners, of course, every week, Alexander Rodriguez from On the Rocks Radio and UBN Radio. He's going to be a guest tomorrow, but he's always been great at sending guests our way. And in fact, our first guest today, Katie, is a friend of Alexander's. So a big shout out to that. If you're listening every Tuesday, 3 hours after my show, catch him live and on the rocks. He has a new show with Elizabeth Keenan, which we'll talk about in a little bit. And then, of course, Craig and Brandon. That's Craig Ramsey and Bren Liberati from Fit and Fab. Thank you for being great media partners, finding us some great guests. If you haven't checked out their newest workout video and beauty video, Workouts a Drag with the amazing Pandora Box. Definitely want to go check that out. And, of course, we have True FM right here in Columbus, Ohio, that simulcasts and shares the Left and Straight show every week. So big shout-out to my media partners. Thank you so much for that. We're still looking for sponsors to help pay the bills, but I really appreciate these media partners. Be sure to follow me on social media at Twitter and Instagram, at Left of Straight. That's LeftOfStr and the number 8. On Facebook, you can like our page at Left of Straight Show. You can follow me personally and friend me personally at Scott Fullerton. I always love to make new friends, so be sure to do that. As I said, tomorrow's guest, we have from the L Word, Elizabeth Keener from Skirt. She's been in so many great things. And Alexander on the Rocks. Wednesday, I'm bringing Jennifer Bernardi from Massachusetts on. She created Tiggy, a bisexual advocate that has her own serial webcomic that's out of this world. She's going to be standing on my soapbox with me on Wednesday as we talk about the current events of the week. And then on Thursday, like I said, Kevin and I will be having Healing Stigma, and we're going to be talking to the editor and founder of the Gay and Lesbian Review up in New England. and we may be able to give out, for all of you readers out there or writers, be able to give you a free subscription. So be sure to tune into that. We want to do that throughout the show if we can. So, wow, just a great week full of shows. So excited for all of that. So it's going to be a great time. So I hope you guys had a fantastic week. We're going to go ahead and I'm going to go ahead and play a little song here for you. Good friends of the show, if you remember, we had them a couple of weeks ago. The amazing Brandon and James. That's Brandon James and James Clark, the duo Brandon and James, a vocal cello duo. Their campaign starts today for You Belong. It's a hashtag You Belong, and it's all about getting rid of labels and inclusivity. And they're starting their brand new web, the video for it premieres today on YouTube. Go to Brandon James on YouTube. Look for the video. It's a video that you listeners helped inspire. Everyone sent in videos. I'm going to be playing it on my social media later. Look for that. But we're going to play the song right now. This is their Fancy Nancy kind of club version of it. So this is Brandon and James for You Belong. Brand new social media hashtag starting today. When we come back, we're going to have on the lovely, the amazing Cody Sullivan. You're listening to the Left of Straight show right here. We'll be back in just a couple of moments.
Back in fighting the law of attraction, never the one taking action. Years of denying this beauty inside. Sleeping, scared of the fear they'd speak, and I never knew I was a beacon, waiting and waiting to light up the sky. When you're down and out, don't know what to do, what I found for me, I can be for you. If it comes from love, it'll never, ever
And we are back, guys. That is the amazing vocal and cello duo of Brandon and James. Their new hashtag campaign, You Belong, the video premieres today. Go check for it on YouTube. Use You Belong in your hashtag. Let's go ahead and eliminate labels out there. We're going to try to have them as a surprise special guest, but they got pulled, believe it or not, to Panama last second. So they left yesterday for Panama for a quick tour. We know they're artists in residence right now in Santa Fe, New Mexico for the entire month, but they have a crazy travel schedule. But guys, let's jump right into it. I'm so happy. My first guest is a woman who really does it all as an actress, producer, writer, and athlete. But instead of backwards and in heels, as the saying goes, she does it as a bilateral above-the-knee amputee and kicks butt. She received her bachelor's in fine arts and acting from Webster University's Conservatory in St. Louis, where she's used her talents in being directed by the incredible Philip Seymour Hoffman in The Long Red Road at the Goodman Theater. She's also had numerous television appearances on shows of NCIS New Orleans, Last Man Standing, My Name is Earl. She also set a new world record at the Paralympics in London in the 100-meter dash and is a sought-after motivational speaker. What more could she do? Please welcome to the show, Miss Katie Sullivan. Katie, how are you?
I'm so good. Thank you so much for having me. I sound pretty good on paper.
You are dang good on paper, my dear. Welcome to the show.
Thank you. Thank you for having me. I'm really excited to be here today.
Well, it's my honor to meet you. As you know, I'm a huge fan of Alexander's show. Alexander is a media partner with his On the Rocks radio. You just kill it every time you're on there. You're so funny. Great questions. You put Alexander in his place. I love you already. You don't even know.
I love being on his show. It's very fun, and I try not to put him in his place too much, but we have a really good banter back and forth. But yeah, no, it's been really fun, and it was very nice of him to make the introduction to you.
Well, I am very pleased. Believe me, I wish I had a cocktail to offer you, but we're in different posts, so hopefully you can pour your own right now. I know Alexander would have you at three sheets to the wind by now, but we'll have some fun anyway, huh?
Yes. Yeah, exactly. Although it's only 2 o'clock where, you know, almost 2:30 where I am. So I guess it's a little early for cocktail hour.
That's true. Unless you're a day drinker, like we know some of our friends are, you're doing okay then. I'm loving you even better there.
No judgment.
It's a judgment-free zone, of course. I love that. Let's go ahead and give all of my listeners a little background. Are you tell a little bit about where you grew up, what your interests were, how you got into acting? You were from Alabama, right?
Right. So I grew up in Alabama, and I was born with my physical circumstance. My parents didn't, up until when my mom was in labor, they didn't know that there was going to be anything different about me. And when she was in labor, one of the doctors was like, uh-oh, which is not what you want to hear when you're in the hospital. But
I was
just a little bit of panic. But so I was born healthy. Like, there was nothing else wrong with me besides the fact that my lower limbs just did not grow. So my parents kind of had to deal with the fact that, you know, they were born with a kid that was different, and they were rock stars. I mean, I have 3 older siblings, and nobody ever in our family ever treated me like I was any different. You know, we had stuff to do, and the fact that I had a disability was part of our family's experience, but it wasn't the primary focus every day. I started wearing prosthetics when I was about 1, and I've worn them ever since. A bilateral above knee amputee. And I started getting into theater actually as a young adult. Singing really got me there first. I started singing in choir and stuff in middle school.
Nice.
I started to kind of look around and figure out like other ways to use my voice. And that's kind of when theater was brought to my attention. And I begged my parents at 12 to audition for the local children's theater production of Sleeping Beauty. And they were very cautious and were just like, you know, you may not get every part you audition for, and they were very careful. And no one else in my family is a performer either. You know, my dad's a doctor and my mom's a scientist, so like they didn't know what to do with me in a lot of ways. But they let me try and they let me fail, and which was a huge testament to how I grew up. But I did get cast in that Sleeping Beauty, which I think helped feed the delusions of grandeur of what it means to be an actor for the rest of
right. Oh, I love it. That's so cool.
Yeah. But that was sort of a community that didn't, again, you know, again, the theater community was this beautiful place where people didn't judge you. You know, we were all sort of those little, you know, kind of weirdos. That we weren't the captain of the football team and we weren't a head cheerleader. We were like other stuff. And so it became this little family that really helped me blossom and gain confidence, which is great.
That's amazing. Now, where did you get the funny from? You have a doctor dad and a scientist mom. Where's your, you have such a natural, innate funniness to you. Where did your sense of humor come from?
I think a couple of places. My mom is very funny, and my siblings, we've always sort of used humor in my family, but I think it was a coping mechanism, to be honest, growing up. You know, if you can crack a joke and make other people laugh or make other people comfortable about who you are, it breaks the ice, and then they're a little less afraid of, you know, you, that person that's different in some way. So I really think I developed my sense of humor as a way to cope with being different.
That's awesome. Very cool. And then what got you to go to college? You went to college at the conservatory over there in St. Louis. Was that your first choice, or what made you want to go over there?
You know, honestly, I attended the Thespian Festival in Lincoln, Nebraska that they have for high school kids every year, and I auditioned for a bunch of schools, theater schools, and I had some places where I was thinking about, but Webster was so personal to me. They really wanted me to be there, which was really awesome for them to kind
of. That is awesome.
For them to just be like, yeah, you're going to have to. I had to take all these same curriculum as everyone else. I had to take movement classes, and sophomore year we had gymnastics, and I had to do everything, you know, to the best of my ability. I had to show up for everything that everybody else had to do. So, again, it was an incredibly safe place for me to say, well, I can do the same as everybody else. And I, at Webster, I played Hedda Gabler, you know, like they didn't treat me with kid gloves. They threw really tough stuff at me. And I think it was a place where I grew and gained confidence in my ability as an actor, which was incredible.
That is definitely cool. God, I love that. That's what schools are supposed to be. You hear about it, what they're supposed to be, and that they never turn out to be that way. But that's so awesome that you actually have an arts program that does what it needs to be in a whole school. It's welcoming like that. I love that.
You know, it's funny. My senior year, we did a play where one of the characters was written as an amputee, and they cast me in a different role. And looking back on it now, I don't know if that was, like, I make a really convincing amputee, so I don't know if that was like a huge mistake. There are. The theater community specifically has been tremendous in that sort of not playing on the type so much. I mean, moving to LA, and you kind of do fall into those like categories a little bit. I mean, we're getting there, but it's tough. It's you know, it's, to me though, if you can play whatever makes you different, sort of to your advantage, and then you have to show up at the audition and just be the best one there. So no pressure.
Right. Yeah. Nothing at all there.
Yeah.
Now let's get serious for 2 seconds. I want to ask a serious question, cause I honestly don't know. Now when you have your prosthetics, you said you got prosthetics very young, and I imagine they have to change as they grow. Is there different sets? Like you use the like little springy ones. I don't know what to call them. Springy ones for your running. Do you have different sets that you use for different occasions, or how does that work? That's gotta be expensive to have like 8 jillion sets or something. How does that work?
Yeah. So I have one pair that's sort of my everyday walk around kind of legs, and those are probably the most expensive. They are set up to be, they're microprocessor knees, so they check in with me 50 times a second, and they give me more or less resistance somewhere I am in space, and incredibly high technology. I have feet that I can kind of change out, I can wear heels and things like that, which is really important to me personally. But then, so I have a completely different set for running. So I have sort of a set of legs that are designed for like longer distances. And then I have a set of legs that are designed for sprinting specifically. So they're shaped differently because you're doing, you know, different activities with them. But those are not really the kinds of legs that you'd like hang out in all day. They're on you more aggressively, and running feet specifically don't have a heel. So you're kind of constantly like up on your tiptoes. So, they're designed for a very specific action.
Gotcha. Well, you just work them so well. I mean, if you're not watching the show live, you're listening to this on the podcast replay, go back to the Blog Talk show, because we have this slideshow that goes underneath. You work some pictures, man. You are a gorgeous creature. And you have some great pictures with the long drape thing and your tracksuit. And it's just, that's like I said, it looked like, I couldn't tell if they're different pairs or not, but you looked amazing. Absolutely amazing.
Oh, thank you. Well, I mean, and part of that too is, I've been using prosthetics since I was one. So, it's like anybody who is like, you know, they have circus performer parents and they're on stilts from the time that they're 2 years old. You know, I mean, they do amazing things. So it's just kind of how my body has adapted to what I've asked it to do. And technology has changed and evolved over the course of my life, and it's been really cool to see, and it's cool to see what, you know, is potentially coming up. And yeah, there's all sorts of prosthetics are a really cool world, I must say.
That is awesome. Well, let's get back to the acting a bit then. You were fortunate enough to work with Philip Seymour Hoffman. He directed you before he passed away. What was that experience like? Did you actually able to learn something? Were you just kind of in awe the whole time and doing what? How does that work?
You know, working with Philip Seymour Hoffman was one of the most extraordinary experiences I've had as an actor. The amount that man took care of the craft of acting, it was extraordinary, and it was intimidating. But
imagine.
At the same time, he was such an actor's director, and he didn't direct a ton before he passed away, but he knew how actors felt. And so the constant sort of questioning whether you're doing something right or, you know, wanting to perform in a certain way, I think the thing that I took away from working with him, and I've been able to implement it recently in work that I've done, is that freedom to sort of give yourself the permission that the work is never done. You should be showing up for closing night of a show and find something new that night. There should be new discoveries as an actor, as a character, because, you know, every day is different. And if it's exactly the same and robotic, then you're not living in the moment the way you should be. So I think
that's
that was really
advice,
the biggest. The biggest piece for me was just sort of like, there is no end. There is no like, okay, that was perfect, I never have to do it again. You know, it's a living, breathing thing that's going to be different every single time.
That is so cool. And you've, like I said, I listed a bunch of, but you've done lots of numerous TV experiences, NCIS, New Orleans, Last Man Standing, My Name is Earl. Do you kind of learn something from each place that you go into? These are all established series, obviously. Or do they actually get to learn something from you? Because you bring such a unique perspective into acting. Have you had any unique moments with any of the cast or any of the crew, any of those type shows?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, every show is different, obviously. Like Last Man Standing was the end of the week you film in front of a live studio audience, which was really fun. I always say that it's sort of like if doing theater and shooting a movie had a baby. That's sort of the live studio audience experience, and it's tremendous. It's super fun, and the energy of the audience being there and reacting to you in real time was super exciting. Shows like NCIS New Orleans, these, you know, juggernaut shows that have spinoffs, and, you know, they are well-oiled machines. It's unbelievable to sort of see the thing in motion and see how many people it takes to make something like that work. I recently brought my mom to the set of a TV show, and she was shocked at how many people were there. Everybody's just standing around, and it's like, well, no, they're waiting for their opportunity to do their job.
Right.
But it is kind of a cool thing to see sort of these giant, well-oiled machines in motion. It's humbling because you're just, you know, there may be two or three people that have things to say as actors, but it takes 50 other people or more get a shot.
Right.
So pretty awesome.
Yeah. Everyone at home is like, what the hell is a key grip and everything, but they actually have a purpose.
Yeah.
Everyone needs something to do. So it's kind of crazy.
Yeah, and maybe that every, you know, they work for 10 minutes every hour, but those 10 minutes are really important.
right.
Yeah,
I love that. Now you've done, of course, your own stuff. You've acted for other people, but you and a friend have created Sully Flynn Productions with a partner.
Yeah.
You're going to produce comedy and work on a sitcom called Legs About You, which I love. Talk about how you and your partner got together, and talk a little bit about your production company.
So Becca Flynn is my my partner, and that's where Sulla Flynn comes from, Sullivan and Flynn. We're a female-based production company that we just sort of, at one point, it was born from us. We had worked together. She directed me in a play here in Los Angeles called A Piece of My Heart. And we just loved working together. And she actually is a graduate from Webster University, too. We met at an alumni event. So go to alumni events. They work. So,
yeah, really. Network, darn it. There you go.
Networking, totally. But we started to talk about how it felt like we were waiting to ask permission, you know, to get permission from other people to be creative and to have a good time. And so we were like, well, hell, we could do that ourselves. Like, why not? So we started writing sketches, and whenever we kind of felt like things, you know, struck us as funny. And some of our earlier sketches where we did this mashup of Orange is the New Black and Orphan Black, and we called it Orphan is the New Black. And, you know, it's clones in prison, and, you know, it's just silly stuff, but it's evolved into a viable production company. We have a couple of projects in development, and she and I are currently working alongside of Orlando Jones's production company, Legion of Creatives, to pitch and get our the comedy pilot that we've written out there. And that's sort of the primary focus right now, but we have other projects sort of in development right now. And it's been really fun. We work really well together, and we make each other laugh. And she pushes me to places that I'm like, okay, I guess we'll do a poop joke here.
You need to be able to really push each other.
Yeah. And it's been an incredible working relationship. And just exciting too. We were fellows year 2015 fellows at the Producers Guild of America together, and so we're getting our work out there and becoming producers, which is just a hat I didn't expect to wear, but it's been really awesome.
Well, that is so cool. That's just lots of fun. I'd love to see people that are that's what it is anymore in Hollywood. Everyone I talk to sees in Hollywood, if you're not creating your own things anymore, it's all about how many 8,000 Facebook friends you have and this in order to even get a job anymore, right?
Yeah, no, it's true. I mean, they, you know, things do come down sometimes to numbers and what kind of social media following you have and stuff like that. And that's the world we live in. So you kind of have to get yourself out there and do the best that you can. And we're working on it, you know, but it's at the end of the day, we're primarily focused on feeling creatively fulfilled and taking our careers into our own hands. And so far, it's been incredibly fruitful.
Very cool. Well, let's go ahead and take a little bit of break, and we're going to play a little song here. When we come back, I want to talk all about your amazing athleticism, what you've done in the Paralympics, and you just came back from a real cool gig, so I can't wait to talk about that. Since I'm traveling through Buffalo on my world tour here of New England, I'm going to play a little of my good buddy, JW. JW does a bunch of really cool songs, and I think we'll play a little bit of Get Here When You Can. You're listening to Left of Straight Show. We have on Katie Sullivan, actress and amazing Paralympic competitor. We'll be back in just a couple of moments.
Yeah.
And we are back. That was a live version of John Williams, Get Here When You Can. Love that guy. Guys, we're having a great show today. The amazing Katie Sullivan has joined us. Katie, I want to talk a little bit about how the heck did you get into track and field? I mean, I'm a little chubbier than Alexander. I don't like to run and catch a cab. I mean, I'm so impressed with this. Talk to me about this athletic ability. Where did that come from?
You know, it's funny. Growing up, I would never have called myself an athlete. And it just kind of sports were not something that were super fun for me because I would get to sort of a plateau with any sort of activity and I couldn't break through to like that next level of gymnastics, or I was always coming in last in swimming and things like that. So
okay.
It wasn't until I was in my 20s, I was 25, and I got to try a pair of running blades to see sort of how it would be. And honestly, the true intention of it was just for physical fitness and health and those kinds of things. I mean, I'm an actor, so it's good to be in shape and stuff like that. But it truly wasn't there. I had no delusions of grandeur in the world of Paralympic sport or Olympic sport. And I having the opportunity to run for the first time in my life at 25, I figured out that I actually was pretty quick, which I didn't know because I didn't have the equipment. Yeah. That was
it the competitive streak in you that made you compete, or did you find out how quick you were and that kind of led you to keep going?
You know what, it was my prosthetist suggested that we go to a track meet, and I had never even been a spectator at a track meet before. I was, like, signed up to be in one, and it's a terrifying experience. There's, you know, people running everywhere, and you have numbers on your hip and lanes, and they shoot guns at you, and it just it's like
oh, my goodness. You make it sound terrifying now. Wait a second.
Yeah, it's terrible. No, but I just was like, I'd rather sing the national anthem in front of all these people than run this race, which is completely opposite for most people. Public speaking is, you know, up there with death for people's fears.
Right, right.
I had never done it before in my life, and it was at that first track meet that we just went to for fun that a Paralympic track coach was there scouting people, and he had never seen a bilateral above the knee amputee woman run like I had done. So he was like, his jaw hit the floor, and he was just like, you know, how serious about this are you? And I was like, not at all. So
that is so all kinds of awesome. I just love that.
Yeah.
So now you're in London. You're in the Paralympics in London, and your time got you like what, sixth in the world or something? Talk about that. What's that?
Yeah. So as a bilateral above the knee amputee at the Paralympic Games in London, that was the first time that women like me have ever made it to the games on our feet. So there have been bilateral amputees that have, you know, done wheelchair racing and things like that, but we've never had amputees on blades get to the games. And there were two men and two women that made it to the London Games on our feet, which is in history. So pretty ridiculous. But I ended up having to – so Vanessa was the other athlete. She's a German athlete, and she's just incredible. But we had to compete against unilateral above-knee amputee women. So they have a downside, a totally able-bodied side on one side. So out of the blocks in 100 meters, they're way faster than bilateral amputees are. So we're constantly playing catch-up, but – I ended up finishing sixth in the world in the London Games and set an American record that day that stood for another couple years. And it was – I can't explain that moment of, you know, getting into the blocks and having, you know, being announced in front of a stadium of 80,000 people, and having the USA across your chest is, it's a pretty spectacular and humbling thing to be able to do. And you know, it kind of didn't matter to me what number I came in. The fact that I was there and worked for that long and through injuries and successes and all of that stuff, just being able to stand there and represent your country it's pretty good.
I can't even imagine, I guess. Goodness. Yeah. And then all of a sudden you have this full circle moment this year. I think one of your first Paralympics was in Rio, and this year invited back to be a color commentary, or how did that come about?
So my team and I sort of were talking about, you know, I do a lot of speaking and traveling and things like that. And they were like, what about, you know, these games coming up? Maybe there's a way for you to be involved with the sort of NBC team that's covering the Paralympics. And we pitched me to them, and they wanted to meet me. So they sent me a binder of bios and a couple of heat sheets and flew me to New York. And they were like, see you in 2 days. So very little sort of instruction or anything like that. But honestly, I think it's exactly what you said, this full circle moment of, I have a history of improv and I'm an actor and I can sit in a booth and have the excitement, you know, I can put myself there and as an actor and sort of, and that improv skill obviously comes into play when you're just kind of, we're going live and here we go. And this
right.
Is, you have a live microphone.
And how was it? Did you have fun? Or talk to me about the experience. Was it fun?
It was an awesome experience. The team at NBC was just amazing. And honestly, more than anything, the thing, even before I left Los Angeles, the communication that they were putting out about how we were to use language when dealing with how we talk about the Paralympics was so incredibly, it meant so much to me that they were putting so much care into, you talk about the athlete first and then the conditions second. And you talk about, you know, for me, what I really tried to do is while these athletes were getting in the blocks and things like that, what we could talk about the classification or, you know, we're looking at a visually impaired heat of 100 meters or we're looking at amputees running or something like that. But once the gun went off, I really tried to focus on just the athleticism and who ran the best race and those kinds of things. They took a lot of care. NBC did a great job, as far as I'm concerned, about being concerned about vocabulary and how we were talking about people.
That is awesome. And did they notice how great you were? Are we going to see you on, like, Sunday sports shows now? Or what's up with that?
I don't know if there's going to be a huge – it wasn't – I don't know if there's a big career change for me here. But it was really fun. And that intimidation of, like, oh, gosh, what do I talk about, went away pretty quickly because you remember that you ran track for 7 years. So you actually do – have an idea what these athletes are going through or what it takes to run 100 meters or the difference between 100 meters and a 400 meter and things like that. It was all stuff that I knew in my bones. So it was to me more about making sure we honored the athletes and talked about the sort of their athleticism and focusing on them as humans and not, you know, oh, they're inspiring because in spite of, they're just awesome people doing amazing things.
Yes, they are. That is so cool. All right, well, let's finish it up. We don't have much time yet. Let's finish up. You did talk a little bit about your motivational speaking. I think what's amazing, you're married to Jay Kramer. He's a stand-up comedian. He's actually in a wheelchair, and you guys go out and just do these amazing speaks. Talk, brag about your husband a little bit and talk about your speaking engagements.
Yeah, he is the opener I've ever had. He's incredible. I love going to school. We actually have a school that we're speaking at in the Los Angeles area tomorrow. And honestly, more than anything, I mean, my husband is a stand-up comedian in a wheelchair, and I'm certain that there's a joke in there somewhere, but we go into schools and we bring the message, and to, you know, we speak at not just schools, but, you know, for corporate events and things like that. But, you know, it's overcoming obstacles, and whatever life throws at you, what do you do with that in the face of, in the face of those obstacles? Who are you in the face of yeah. those challenges? And I'm, you know, from birth, my situation, but Jay, was in a rock climbing accident when he was 30 and broke his neck. And, you know, he said a number of times it's the best thing that ever happened to him. It, you know, gave his life an incredible amount of perspective. And he's an actor that has had more opportunities in the wheelchair than he ever did on his feet. You know, he had 8 years in LA as an able-bodied white guy who looked like a frat boy with blonde hair. And having something that distinguishes you in some way is a huge asset. He's been on Grey's Anatomy, and he was on Desperate Housewives and NCIS Los Angeles. And, you know, we both have sort of figured out ways to make those things that seem like deficit be your asset.
That is so cool. Now talk about different places. You said you do corporate events, you do school, just any place for motivational speaking, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And I have kind of two websites. There's katiesullivan.net is just all about me and the running and acting and all that stuff. But we have a website together that's jandkatie.com. So jandkatie.com, and Katie is with a Y. That sort of focuses on our speaking and what we bring to the table and all of that. So, yeah, if people are interested in having us kind of come in and slap some sense into people and let them know that you're getting in your own way, we're happy to do it.
Well, I'm going to be your own personal bookie. I have three shows that you. I love you on this show. I'm going to bring you back. We talked a little bit off air. I want you back for Standing on Our Soapbox. You have a fantastic soapbox. But I think you and Jay together, I would love to have you on my Healing Stigma on Left to Straight Radio, because you can talk about the stigma of what, how it happened, how you guys have overcome that. I think you guys are just an inspirational story for everyone. It's amazing.
Oh, thank you. We'd be happy to do it. And, you know, it is figuring out a way to take what life has dealt you and play that hand as best you can and to your advantage. And if that means bluffing, then you bluff.
There you go. I love it. When in doubt, punt. I love that.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
All right. Well, do me a favor before I get you out of here. Why don't you give all of my guests where they can find you on social media, give your websites one more time and where they can follow you on social media, because you are funny as heck.
Oh, thank you. So I'm on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram, Katie Sullivan, Sullivan. And my handles are at KBridgetS. And then our websites are katiesullivan.net and jandkatie.com.
Well, Katie, it's been my pleasure having you on. Thank you so much for being on the show today. You are amazing.
Oh, thank you. Likewise.
Well, let's go ahead. Stay on the line for me. We're going to play a little bit of Levi Christ, good friend of the show. This is his song, Hello. You're listening to the Left of Straight show. We just have the amazing Katie Sullivan, and we will be back with author Scott Pomfret in just a little bit. Hold on. Here's Levi.
No one cares, no one even knows.
That is Levi Christ with Hello. We are listening to Left of Straight Show here. Mom just got back to the room on a road trip, and she did not have fun downstairs at the casino, so we're not doing well here. But that's okay. We still got another great interview to do. We have coming up amazing author Scott Pomfret. His new book just came out a little bit ago, and it's all about a little bit of football. So we got the hot coach and the hot quarterback, and oh, my goodness, so much to talk about. You'll listen to Left of the Straight Show. We're going to play one more song break. When we come back, we're going to have Scott Pomfret on. This is another Levi Christ. This is so much better. Listen to Left of the Straight Show. We'll be back in just a couple of moments.
Take an afternoon drive. I've been working too hard. I wanna leave it all behind me. Pushing and pulling, yeah, the world keeps spinning around and around. But I go with the flow. Nobody gonna get me down. See, I tell you the secret by the way that love. Gonna be. It's a super sexy, conscious, cosmological ecstasy. Getting hold of me. Your body unwind. You see, you got everything you want. You just gotta open up your eyes and sing it. Holding on to something when there's nothing that you can do to change it. Just let it go with the flow. Get about your business doing you. Oh, oh, oh. Say, I tell you a little secret how to make it only. Oh, it's a super sexy, conscious, cosmological ecstasy. Get it hold of me. It's so much better now. Baby, love, don't you know that it's so much better now. Feel good to let it go. And it's so much better now. It's a super sexy, conscious, cosmological ecstasy. Get a hold of me. Now. go. Oh, it feels good to let it go. Oh, 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 oh,
oh. All righty, and we are back. That is Levi Christ with So Much Better. Of course, Levi is getting ready. I think he's starring right now in Pump Boys and Dinettes. He made he got his Tony Award for Million Dollar Quartet, of course, on Broadway. So glad to have you. I think we're going to have him back on the show in December. He's working on that new album, so we'll have him talk about that. But guys, my next guest, I'm so excited to have on. Him and I have been talking for a while. He's an author whose recent book, The Second Half, A Gay American Football Story, is very timely this time of year. As all know, my mom is a huge football fiend. We have the Red Zone going every Sunday, and I don't understand a lick of it. His other works include The Hunger Man, Only Say the Word, and a collection of short stories called You Are the One. He's written in all sorts of genres, from short stories to romance novels to memoirs, and he currently divides his time between Boston and Provincetown. I'm so happy to have him on the show. Please welcome Scott Pomfret. Scott, how are you?
I'm doing great, Scott. Thanks for having me on the show. I appreciate the chance to talk to you.
Oh, it's my pleasure. I love having writers on, people that are so much smarter than me. Thank you so much. I love your style.
I wouldn't bet on that, but glad to be here nonetheless.
Well, I enjoyed it. Thank you for sending me a little sneak copy there. I really appreciate it. I think we're going to talk later. We're going to get a copy for someone, one of our listeners today. But welcome to the show. How are you doing?
I'm doing good. I'm sitting here in my old high school football jersey from, I won't even say how many years ago, get myself in the spirit.
Nice character acting. I think you and my first guest could get along great. I love that. In the football jersey itself. That's cool. And are we in Boston or Provincetown today?
So today I am in Boston. Unfortunately, I got to be back here to work. My beloved partner is out in our, taking care of our Provincetown house as we speak. I shouldn't say house, our shack, as we call it.
Well, hopefully we'll be up there in a couple of days. We may have to have an after-work cocktail or something. That'd be a wonderful time.
That sounds good. I'm always up for a cocktail.
Always like the first time on the show, let our listeners know a little bit about you. Talk a little about where you grew up and what got you interested in writing.
Sure. So I grew up in Massachusetts, so I'm a lifelong resident of here, except that I stole away to go to school out in Michigan, saw some real football, but I grew up here. I had a grandfather who's actually Irish, and he produced a play in the Abbey Theater, the famous Abbey Theater in Dublin, and he was my inspiration for writing. And when I was about 7 years old, I published my first ever piece, a poem called The Song of the Humpback Whale, in a literary magazine. And that was kind of the start.
At 7 years old, you were in a literary magazine? Uh-oh.
7 years old, and it was one of these things. It was sort of, they played, you know, this a recording of The Song of the Humpback Whales, and you were supposed to interpret it into a poem. So that was my thing.
I am not worthy. I was just still getting through my kindergartner blocks, I think, and I was 7 years old. I'm not sure. That's pretty cool. I like that. What was it? You said it was a story about whales?
Yeah, it was called The Song of Humpback Whale. It was basically about a lonely baby whale who got separated from the mother humpback whale. It's very, very poignant.
I love it. That's something that seven-year-olds can relate to. I like it. I like it
go.
A lot.
And so then I did not. Then I didn't actually publish anything for years and years and years and years. When I finally put out a story in a sort of a knockoff version of Playboy, a very cheap version of Playboy called Gallery Magazine, when I was about 25. So I had a little dry spell in there, but that was the first thing I put out.
It happens.
And after that,
talk a little bit about some of your others. I know you had some great. Talk about the memoir. Is that a true memoir, or is that just the working title of it?
It was. I'm sort of embarrassed, you know, when you're, you know, I feel like memoirists should be 70, 80 years old before you actually have anything to say. But I wrote this memoir during when same-sex marriage was first coming to Massachusetts, And there was a lot of opposition from, obviously, from the Catholic Church in particular. And I was a member of it. In fact, I was a lector and a Eucharistic minister and all kinds of stuff inside this church in downtown Boston. And it was my memoir about what that experience was like. And in particular, I kind of stalked the then Archbishop, now Cardinal in Boston, and chased him all over the place. And when I could, gave him a piece of my mind. But it's basically about growing up Catholic and what that means in particular, you know, in this sort of modern political world where same-sex marriage is the reality. Although then, you know, that was in 2000, whatever, 3-4. You know, not like
amazing.
The states that it exists in today. So big different time, you know, and I was glad to be out there sort of, you know, chasing down the cardinal by day and going over to the state house and protesting when they tried to overturn same-sex marriage here, which we obviously eventually won.
That's inspiring. That is so cool.
Yeah, and it's not a heavy book by any stretch of the imagination, though. You know, it deliberately pokes fun, you know, at various things Catholic. It's the kind of thing that anybody who went to parochial school, you know, they get it, you know, and anybody who's been rulered by a nun, they get it. You know, it's some
right.
sort of appeal to those folks.
Right. That's so cool, though. I love that. I love you kind of, I mean, especially Boston has such a storied history in that whole genre right now too, because that's where a lot of that scandal and stuff came from back then, and it was kind of an epicenter for a while, wasn't it?
Oh, absolutely. So this was right after the scandal with the priests, which I think was one of the first ones exposed. You know, now everybody since discovered it was all over the place, but it was exposed, I want to say, in like 2001, 2002. So the church was actually in a sort of reeling at the time. You know, it was struggling to, you know, look as if it had any moral suasion whatsoever at that time. So they, you know, I think that's frankly part of why they weren't able to, you know, successfully oppose the same-sex marriage initiatives here.
Right. Wow, that's crazy. I can imagine.
But one of the things that made it unusual was my partner, my life partner, who was also my writing partner at the time, we had put together a series of romances starting right around the time, you know, 2003, 2004, that were pretty graphic, I will say. And so, you know, when we released them, we were in the New York Times, and, you know, I got all kinds of coverage just basically because of the same-sex marriage thing happening here in Massachusetts. And needless to say, that didn't go over particularly well with the church that I belonged to at the time. And
I can imagine, right?
We ended up parting ways.
I can imagine how that's possible. That's too bad, but, oh, man. I think you are the better for it. I think you got the better end of that deal.
I hope so. I hope so. And hopefully we made a mark one way or the other. And with the memoir, you know, helped. You know, somebody who's struggling to kind of see the lighter side of it.
Now, talk about most writers are avid readers too. Any authors really inspire you, or who do you like to read for fun for yourself and for serious, and just for who it kind of inspires you when you read?
Yeah, I read like crazy. I read everything, you name it. I will pick up whatever happens to be sitting around. You know, if I'm out somewhere and I see a book lying around, I'm leafing through it. But I particularly this summer, I've been reading a couple of good novels. One by a gay writer named Garth Greenwell. That's about it riffs off his time in Bulgaria. He's an American, but was living in Bulgaria for a while. Sort of unrequited love for a street person in Bulgaria. And
okay.
Then I read another one by, oh my God, I'm blanking on his name, which is sad because he actually grew up in the same town as me.
Oh no, I do that all the time.
Book,
though.
The book is it's essentially about a family dealing with mental illness, you know, that goes from father to son, and struggle that they have to, you know, survive that, even, you know, facing certain tragedies along the way. But a terrifically, both of them terrifically well written, you know, short. I love people who write, you know, don't feel like they have to regurgitate a million words, but can sort of get the story told in a short time. And both these guys did a great job, and I think they're probably going to end up winning some awards for the work.
Nice. And how do you like to write personally? Do you start longhand? Are you a computer writer? Are you a typewriter? What's your process?
So it's changed over time. I used to be a longhand writer a long time ago. And I also used to be one of those writers who doesn't like to plan ahead. So, you know, imagine the muse is going to strike me, and then, you know, I'll start writing and all will be well. Right. But my partner actually taught me the value of sitting down, and even with fiction, sitting down and having an outline so that you know where you're going. And it is amazing how much faster you get there when you know where you're going as a writer. So
like
I have now adopted
man.
That, and I've adopted that, and he writes for a living. He's a creative director in advertising, so, you know, he's got to do that. So I've adopted it, and yeah, I now lug around a laptop, and I, you know, jot notes into my phone when I'm out in the middle of the street and something occurs to me, and it's all electronic now. In fact, I don't really touch paper books. Other than the one I'm going to send you, I do not touch very many paper books anymore.
I hear that. I'm a Kindle fiend now. I didn't think I'd like a Kindle at first because I like holding the book and the paper of the book. But I'm getting used to my Kindle. I've actually downloaded quite a few now on Kindle. My problem is, too, I'm a very fast reader. And so I don't like to admit this in public, but I'll go ahead and admit it anyway. You don't work for Barnes & Noble, do you?
Nope.
Okay, we're good. I'm such a fast reader. When books I really like come out in hard copy, I usually get it like the first day or second day. I go home and I read it like usually overnight or by the next day. Then I return it and I buy 3 paperbacks I wanted to have in my collection.
Nice.
Because I just read it so fast. So I feel bad for the main author, but I'm actually helping other people. I'll buy it later on when it comes back in paperback, but it helps me that way too. So don't say anything to anyone. The show
that's
goes up.
Right. You're doing your part. Drumming up interest for these writers. They owe you.
It's only 20,000 people that's listening, so it's just between you and me and the fence post here. Where do you get your stories from? How does inspiration hit? Can it be walking along the beach in Provincetown or at the grind at work, or where does your inspiration come from?
So I try to avoid the grind at work because I work in financial services, and frankly, it's just not that interesting. But take this football book that the second half that you mentioned at the start of the show. I actually was a football coach after I graduated from college, and so the basic idea sort of was kicking around out there when my partner and I were writing our gay romance novels, and then we put it away. You know, we stopped publishing them in 2008-ish, 2009, something like that, and put them aside. And I was thinking about it, but not doing any writing on it. And then suddenly, I came up with this idea to have the football player be a veteran of the wars in Iraq and Afghanistan, and so that he could be more or less the same age as the coach. But once I started writing that, it really started to make sense to me. And, you know, I wanted to make, you know, the gay piece of it be as American as apple pie and the military and football and so on and so forth. And it sort of all came together around that. And I was able to combine those different strands into the story.
Well, yeah, and I want to say the character's written so well, and I didn't know how much of that you wanted to give away onto it, but I agree. I think I love the way the characters were developed. I think it did add to the realism of the story and really pull you in even more so. So that was a great read, and it's a really good book, especially around this time of year. We've got everyone's in the huge football mode here, but that's a great book, my friend.
Well, thank you very much. I appreciate your saying that. I do think, you know, this is the time of year for it. You know, everybody watching football here in New England. You know, I one of the characters in the book I named after Tom Brady, the quarterback of the Patriots, who's not allowed to play these days to get suspended. And so everybody in New England's all abuzz about Brady, Brady, Brady. So I figured.
I bet, yeah. Deflategate lives on. Talk about the synopsis. We talked about the characters a bit. Talk about the synopsis of the book a bit. Let's give the listeners a little piece of what it's about, because someone's going to win a copy of it, and I want them to go out and purchase it. But give a brief synopsis of the book as well.
Sure. So we've got a former college quarterback, a star, who has turned to coaching college football after his graduation, basically because he failed in the big game at the end of his career, and nobody was interested in, you know, having him go further in the NFL. And he is coaching the team that he moves with under a terrible, evil head coach, super competitive, overly competitive man, but he's in charge of the quarterbacks, and for 2 years he's you know, staring at this quarterback and thinking how awesome he is and doesn't think he's gay at all. And then eventually they have that moment when it becomes clear that, you know, the attraction is mutual, and they kind of go off and you know, they're having their little private moments here, private moments there. It's getting hot and heavy. And they're trying to keep all this away from the team, and especially from the head coach. And there is there's a gay athletic trainer that wants to expose their love affair. And eventually it is exposed, and the guys end up breaking up for a time. And the season's moving on towards success, and the quarterback coach gets fired and is full of despair. And eventually the guys find a way to get back together, and it doesn't end up perfectly happily ever after, but pretty good look at the future for them by the end.
I love it. It was a really great book. It's a good read, easy read, I think. I think, like I said, the characters, I'd really like your development of the characters, because a lot of LGBT books are a little more fluffier. And this one really has some character developments, and it's really kind of a great story, my friend.
Yeah, the character of the quarterback, you know, has suffered some tough decision making overseas when he was in action, and brings a lot of that back. And he's a really positive character in many ways, but pretty complicated character, and, you know, conflicted about some of the decisions that he had to make, and that throws another little wrinkle into their relationship, because he's sort of got this military baggage that he's carrying with him. Makes him a little rugged, a little complicated, and I think a little sexier.
I agree 100% on that. It's an amazing book, and like I said, we're going to give a signed copy away to a lucky listener later on. You're going to have to go to the website and go to the social media to find out how, but I'm very excited about that. But talk about your other books. I mean, you alluded a little bit about your Irish ancestry. I love how you kind of bring different things. Obviously, we just found out that you were actually a quarterback, and now we find out that you have this other book that I was looking at that I haven't had a chance to read yet. But talk a little bit about The Hunger Man, and that seems a little autobiographical in pieces itself.
So The Hunger Man is sort of a departure for me. Although I'm working on a book that is also based in history, it is something that I did a ton of historical research to get myself into, you know, the milieu of the book. But it is set during the Great Irish Famine. It was from about 1845 through 1850-51, when the potato crop failed in Ireland, and all the Irish ate were potatoes at that time, and the population dwindled from what had been 8 million at the start down to, by the time all the immigration happened, to about 5 million. So 3 million people in about 6 years either were killed, starved, or were you know, came to the United States and became all the great Irish American families here, like Kennedys and so on. So this is about, this is also a bit of a love affair, although between an Irish woman and one of the British occupiers of the time, a soldier also. And they have a sidekick who's a little kind of leprechaunish sprite, a human, at least we think he is, who's sort of gay and slutty and funny and a storyteller. And basically he is trying to protect the woman and her family from ending up starving like everybody else. And the soldier is very sympathetic, but also has his duty. And the brother of the main character is out to he's basically a terrorist, an Irish terrorist way back then, plotting amongst other things to kill Queen Victoria. And so they're hurtling along towards this potential assassination of Queen Victoria, who actually came to Ireland during the famine in 1848. And I won't give away what happens, but the you know, it is a dark book. It is definitely a dark book, and that sort of fun-loving gay character ends up with some pretty troubling things happening to him, and that he does in the course of this fan.
Well, I love the way you develop your plot. That sounds really cool. And that's going to be my next one I think I'm going to read. Now, how are you doing? I'm looking at how these things are published. You had the little time. You took a little time off from the last book. These things are being published like month after month. Are you writing this fast? Or are these stories?
I am
how
not.
Are you getting so many of these books out so quickly?
It would be
so nice to
think that I could write that fast. But no, I'm a little bit of a plotter, actually, as far as writing goes. I took a little bit of time off from publishing anything but short stories from about 2011 through this year.
Right.
But I was writing that whole time. And, you know, the Only Say the Word is also based in my Catholic experience and also based at that time, that same-sex marriage fight time, except a fictional version of it, much more saintly main character than I. Is in charge of it, and I actually wrote that before I wrote the memoir, and it was just sort of sitting on the shelf, and I dusted it off, and I found somebody willing to take a look at it, and The Hunger Man I just finished writing late last year, and the short stories were really just a compilation of, short story book is called You Are the One, it's just a compilation of some of the things that I published in the really over 10 years in various literary magazines, you know, with some of the same themes. You know, there's a military theme in it for sure. There is a, you know, there are a bunch of gay stories, some straight ones, mixed bag. But it's, you know, they really just happened to come out simultaneously and get accepted.
You were my hero for a second. I was wondering.
No, I'd be really impressed with myself. It would be like one of those guys who has it, you know, the stable of writers who write all the books for him, and you can slap his name on the front cover. But alas,
right.
I have none.
And what's brewing in your mind right now? Do you have a couple of ideas or things you're working on? How many stories do you write on at a time? Are you the kind of single-minded where you have to finish a story all the way through, or can you kind of do different inspirations hit at different times and you just make notes? How does that work for you?
I always have a bunch of, particularly short stories, I always have a bunch of notes lying about that are potential stories, you know, in different documents, and I'll add to them when something comes to mind, but I typically am focused on one project at a time, and I may jump, you know, from one to another, put one to bed for a little while, give it some rest, and go to something else and come back. But, you know, so for example, I've got a bunch of sequels to this football book second half that I'm not actually working on, but I know where they're going. But the real thing that I'm focused on today is actually, this is very timely because we have this, this debate tonight. It is another historical book. where the character, some of the same characters from The Hunger Man end up emigrating to New Orleans. And in New Orleans, they say, you know, it's an antebellum period. You know, the obviously slavery is going strong down there. It's a terrible slave market. But the real political event of 1850s New Orleans is the so-called Know-Nothing Party, what was called the American Party, which
right.
So some of this will sound really familiar. You know, they were very anti-immigrants. They were very anti a particular religion, which happened to be Catholicism at that time, and you know, had mobs coming out in the street to suppress our Irish Americans' votes. So themes I think that we can all recognize in the current state of affairs in America. So I'm calling this my Know Nothing novel. I don't know quite when I'm going to be done or what the real title will be, but it's definitely
like
something that I'm taking inspiration.
That is definitely paralleling what we're seeing today. In fact, as we said, we're at the casino here in good old New York, and we have to take a break of gambling for the debates tonight because it's just a crazy time. And I think that's going to be a very cool parallel. I'm excited about that book. I want to copy that one.
It was funny to research it, and you know, the parallels were uncanny. And I thought this, obviously the times are calling. I got to write this one right now.
I love that. Well, if you had your druthers and could just write full time, what do you think you would really? Would you keep kind of going in different directions, or are you starting to like this historical fiction? Do you have a genre you prefer over any others?
I love the research part of the historical fiction, but I actually sort of imagine myself if I won the lottery tomorrow and could write full time, I can imagine doing some actual history, where I went into some archive somewhere and sort of dug out the old letters and old postcards and diaries and people's papers and sort of, you know, wrote a history or a biography. That I think is something that I would love to do. I can't lock myself away in an archive right now because I think my boss would get pissed. So
I understand that, sure.
So
well, that's so cool. I am loving having you on. I love to read, and I'm really excited. Thank you so much for sending that out to me. Thank you so much for signing a signed copy. We're going to have you sign a copy of the book. We're going to give it away right here for the Left of Straight Radio. Keep in touch on the radio show and on the Facebook page and the social media. Why don't you give everyone how they can follow you on social media and how they can get up to date and show you're on Amazon, of course. Where else can they find your books at?
Yep, you can go to Amazon and really any online retailer will have the books. You can go to my two publishers, which are listed on the books. Their websites, they sell them directly. In fact, you will be doing them a favor if you do that, because then they don't have to pay off Amazon. You can find me at scottpomfret.com. That's P-O-M-F-R-E-T. Scott with two T's, scottpomfret.com, and there are links for not only for these books we've been talking about, but for the older books we wrote, the memoir. There's a guide to wine and cocktails that my partner and I wrote together back 10 years ago or so. All you can grab off of there. And on Facebook and Twitter, I'm going to pull in my Irish here again for you. It is Boston Shaughnessy. That's all one word. Shaughnessy is spelled like Sean, S-E-A-N-A-C-H-I-E. So Boston Shaughnessy. Shaughnessy means storyteller in Irish.
That is amazing. I love that. That's a great – I don't know if I'd ever remember how to spell it, but I love that.
That's the challenge. My partner, as I said, is in advertising. He's like, you got something that no one's going to be able to spell. They're never going to find you. You got to get a better one. But
we'll put your bio up on the website when we put this. We'll put this episode up on the website next week, and it'll have a link to all that stuff for it. Scott, thanks so much for coming on. I hope you'll give us first shot at bringing you on when the next book comes out.
Scott, this has been great. I appreciate the opportunity, and great to talk to you.
All right, well, stay on the line for me, Scott. Guys, we'll be back in just a couple of minutes. You're listening to the Left of Straight Show. We have an amazing author, Scott Pomfret. You're going to love these LGBT-themed books and just historical fiction. And like I said, the character development, I loved it. I got to read the football book. It's amazing, and you're going to have a good time with that. We're going to play a little bit of John Williams' Chasing Cars. When we come back, we'll wrap it up and be out of here. Guys, you're listening to the Left of Straight Show. Are back. That's with our good friend John Williams with Chasing Cars. Guys, great show today. Thanks so much for listening in. Hope you'll share it with all your friends. If you listen to it on iPhones, please give it a big thumbs up rating on there. And if you haven't downloaded the app yet, go to your iPhone or your Android app store, type in Left of Straight Radio. It's a free app. You'll never miss any episode of any of our shows here. A big shout out again to Kevin, who's in D.C. today, talking with the Bisexual Resource Center in the White House. And thanks to all my guests. Thank you so much to Katie Sullivan and to Scott Pomfret. Tomorrow we're going to have on my great friend Alexander Rodriguez and from the L Word, Elizabeth Keener. So we'll be, I'm going to be either in New York or Massachusetts. I'll let you know as the travels go. Thanks so much for listening to the Left of Straight Show. I'm your host, Scott Fullerton, and we will talk to you tomorrow at 2 p.m. Pacific, 5 p.m. Eastern Time, right on Blog Talk Radio. Have a great night.